Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of experience experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it.
Hello, everybody, and Happy New Year. Welcome to 2018. This is Zach Schaefer.
And David Ponder.
And we are bringing Life Lab to you. We hope you've enjoyed the first few days of the year. Today, what do we got? January 7th. What is it, Sunday?
Sunday,
January 7th, 7 a.m. here in St. Louis, Missouri. Today, what did we finish up with last week? A two-part series on technology, which Dave was very excited to talk about. And we could talk a lot. We are going to talk a lot more about specific technologies in the upcoming year.
I think that one will be a fun one to listen to years down the road.
Absolutely.
You're like, oh, I was totally wrong.
It's kind of like going back and watching Back to the Future 2 or any movie with a lot of technology in it to see if we were right or wrong, prophecies. Today, though, we're going to talk about something that is somewhat of a theoretical or abstract academic concept, but it can also just be very common sense, and it's tied to every single human on this planet, whether we spend time thinking about it or not. And that's our identity. And so we actually called it on our cover art, Identity Evolution. And we probably shouldn't have done that. We should have just called it Identity.
So but it evolves over life, and we'll just put that spin on it.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Even if you believe that your identity is stable, like as an adult, you know, mine's stable, it doesn't change. Okay, fair enough. And then we could talk and have some interesting disagreements or agreements. But from the time you're 18 to the time you're 35, you probably want different things. So we could both agree that you evolve somewhat.
I would argue I'm not the same person. If you put those two people in a room together and brought up some stuff and we were talking about it, yeah, not the same. But anyway.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I want to kick it to you, Dave, because I know you like to kind of start things off with a bit of a definition of identity. Did you Google it, or did you just come up with something on your own?
Oh, you know what? I did. I don't have it up right now. Let me try and get it going.
While Dave's finding that, I'm going to throw this out. We're going to be changing a few things this coming season. We're going to be changing our intro, which we think is stale and shitty and old. A couple people very close to us have said, it's disingenuous. You need to change what you say because you're not doing it for your kids anymore. You're doing it because you guys like to. And so we said, fair enough.
This is true.
So we're going to change that.
We admit it.
But it did start that way, but it has evolved.
It's evolved, and it's become something that, you know, we're passionate about.
That we love.
We're starting to hear feedback from – you know, not just our most inner ring of friends about it, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, when we get random people that we come across that have mentioned it, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, so anyway, and because of that, I think we've changed our plans, right?
Absolutely.
We're going to go a little bigger.
And we're going to also try, because in that we said, we keep these to 30 minutes, and almost all of them have been an hour. So this one, we're going to try to keep to 40 minutes or less.
Yeah, we've actually got a timer going.
Yeah,
right
it's right in front of
we'll
us.
See how this goes. So the definition of identity is, I mean, it shows you how ambiguous this topic is. I don't think people think about their identity all that often, and I think they should more. The state or fact of remaining the same one or ones as under varying aspects or conditions. That's the first one. That's a terrible definition. The second one, and this one's even worse, the condition of being oneself or itself and not another. Yeah, are you kidding? Yeah, of course. So, I don't know. I think identity is something that we build, and it's, for me, I would say our identity is how we see ourselves. That's like our personal identity and how we portray ourselves to others. What would you say?
So self-perception and projection is what you just talked about. 100%. To me, my definition of identity is my sense of self, who Zach is. And while I personally believe there's obviously stable aspects and facets to my identity, there are a ton of them that are evolutionary. And there are many that I'm going to discover in the future that I don't know are there. And I think that that scares a lot of people. Mm-hmm. That's why they wrap their arms around, I'm the same person. I am me. And they tie that to belief structures.
I've always been this way.
Yes, exactly. And again, there are aspects to our personalities, right? We could pull in psychology that do stick with us over time throughout our lives. But to me, identity is, it's a large, abstract background, foreground situation. So there are some things I believe operating in the background that pull through my entire life, but there are things in the foreground that I didn't pay attention to or I didn't know were there that I might discover.
I'll say it this way. I see it, think about it as like a modular thing, right? You've got your core, and that's you, that's your identity. And then you have things that you layer on top of it to build a character, right? We've talked about this character that we have to be and whatever. So I think like the groups you belong to, your occupation, all these things, they aren't actually you, but they are modular things that you've built up upon your core that other people see, that you project yourself as, that influence your activity in a day-to-day basis. But throughout the course of life, those things come and go. Right? They'll get stripped away. When you retire, you're no longer that occupation. Now you're a retired professor, you know, or
so what you're, whatever. What you're describing in the academic world will be called social identity theory. And it's the fact yes. that we build large portions, not entirely, but large portions of our identity based on the social group categories that we belong to. So your retirement example is perfect. Professor Zach might project and act and think and believe certain things, but if he retires, retirement Zach, that's going to change, mm-hmm. and very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I saw that in Bob Krizik.
Yeah. And other people will see you differently
absolutely.
Based on that status, right?
So yeah. here, so going back to my definition, which is, again, my sense of self, my sense of Zachness, if you will, where does that come from? Plain spoken, four regions, I believe this is it. What you read, what you watch, who you talk to, who you work with.
I like that. Right? But I'll even say what you think.
But all four of those things influence what
they
you think.
They do. I'll say this one on the think thing, and then we'll move on. I feel like thoughts come and go, and they may be yours or they may not be yours. They may be the same thought that somebody else thought for thousands of years. It's just evolutionary based in us. And you decide which ones you grab onto and hold onto. I have thoughts come and go all the time that sometimes I'm like, ooh, that's a bad thought. That ain't me. You know what I mean? I don't know where it came from. But I'll just say that and leave it there. I think the thoughts that you embrace, how's that sound?
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, since we're doing this, let's do a little thought experiment. Can you think before you know language? Before you understand the construct and structure of language, can you even have a thought?
That's hard. I'm going to – a lot of people might say no, but that's just because we don't know – we don't remember our life before language, right? I would have to think that
it's a philosophical question.
That don't have language, that kids pre-language, I would have to think that they can think. Yeah.
So when does a kid develop their sense of self? And I obviously science can probably show us some of that. My point is, do you remember with your kids when you're holding that
in the
baby,
mirror,
looking in the mirror, yeah. and then they're like, they're like, holy shit, that's me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Dylan's got it, and he's one.
Okay. Interesting. So that sense of self in humans clearly develops pretty early where we can at least identify what I'm seeing, the projection, if it's a true mirror, is me. Now let's make it more abstract. What about when you're in a social situation and there is no mirror and you're communicating in a way and you're like, ooh, that's not me. So what sense of self are we projecting at that point?
I think the feedback that we get from others is the mirror, right?
Right.
I think all the world is a stage, and we're – so, yeah.
Awesome transition. Yeah. So the only academic thing I was going to bring in, it's actually a really good book that I think many people would enjoy reading, and it's called – it's by Irving Goffman, who's a very famous sociologist, and the book's called The Presentation of Self in Everyday Life. And it's about just that, how we present ourselves just going through normal life. And the key concepts that he gets into is he believes we live in a front stage and a backstage. And the easiest way to think about this is at a restaurant. How do servers act when they're in the back behind the closed doors? Much differently as soon as they walk through those front doors to the people out front. He says, It is not just reserved to the work world. That is our lives, whether we're dealing with our wife, our spouse, our husband, our kids. But our front stage, backstage might just be internally what we're thinking and feeling, and then externally what we are trying to present and project.
That is so awesome because, I mean, we're hitting at 10 minutes, what I was hoping that we would get to by the end, which is discomfort with the front stage. Okay. So, I read something, and I took notes on it, but it basically says when people misrepresent themselves or present themselves in out of character ways to impress an audience, the behavior is unnatural and exhausting. The behavior requires greater cognitive resources because the mind is filled with self-doubt, self-conscious, and potentially negative thoughts. So when you're public speaking, everyone has a fear of public speaking, right? And all this is a degree of that. You are putting on, you're playing a part, and it is hard. It is exhausting. It is tiring. When I get done with a day of meetings at work and I'm being that Dave, oh my God, I feel just exhausted and done. And honestly,
Well, again, so let's go to maybe some of those traits that do carry through and are more stable over time, right? So we could bring in the predictive index. Somebody with a high need for extroversion, and all that literally means, coming from Carl Jung, the famous psychologist, is focusing our attention on the external world. That's what extroversion means. Introversion is focusing your attention on your internal world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're constantly focused on the external world, you like shiny things, bells and whistles. You want to look good all the time. You want to be on stage. You recharge your batteries at a conference where you're constantly on all the time.
Mm.
You're restless when you're at home. You're a pacer because you want to be connected and around
people.
You want to
be out. You want to be connected.
Right? So my point is, go ahead. You had an aha moment.
Yeah. My aha moment is sometimes I feel like I want to be connected, but I want to be connected as backstage Dave.
There you go.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So there's a lot of people out there that, and most of them are probably more academic, I would assume, or artistic, that believe there is no stable identity at all. Zero. It doesn't exist. Identity is a made-up construct, and that's a postmodern approach to identity, that we have no identity. Mm. What do you think about that?
I don't think, like I said, I believe there's a core there. So I've seen certain trends and certain tendencies about myself throughout my life that, you know, some I've worked to improve, some I've worked to overcome, but some that I just feel like once you embrace that core and when you better build, well, you know, I was talking about the modules that you lay upon the core. If those modules are more in alignment with the core, I believe you're happier. It's because it's like backstage view, right? Which is what you naturally fall into. It takes less energy, takes less effort. It's more in alignment with what you are. So it's not like you're never going to have more modules on top of your core. Let me explain it this way. We're born. We're kids. We're on a playground together, you know? You come up, hey, what's up, Susie? You know, who is Jack and Susie on the playground? They're two kids. They're just two kids. That's it. They're all the same. They're all equals. Think about the kids that you went to grade school with and the way that you saw each other, right? And then do the thought experiment of doing a reunion now, and some of them are fathers and some of them are mothers, and one is a lawyer and one of them started a successful company and he's a millionaire, right? But you spent years and years with them when they were just the kids, right? They were just that. And all they are now is a grown-up version of that, and they've just stacked these modules and these BS things on top of it, right? And you can be like, I know who you are. I know you at your core, or, you know? So I feel like that is that identity, that core that I'm talking about, is there, and it's part of you. Like, you know, some people have tempers, and some people are just naturally patient, and some people are naturally, you know, introverted or extroverted, whatever. I don't know but I think there is a core.
You're
there.
Almost sounding like someone that would say, people don't change. I know people.
No.
People stay the same. The core, you're there. You can hide it. You can bury it. You can suppress it. It's still there. No. I know the real you.
No. Okay. Yeah, that's a bad way of it. I think it evolves, and I think that you can change and get better at things and worse at things in your core, but I think that I guess what I think about your core is like what you're naturally inclined to want or do or feel comfortable with, right? And then kind of feeding that.
Let's make it real concrete, and this is a big moment for me, people.
All right, let's do it.
Hi, my name is Zach Schaefer, and I'm an alcoholic. And anybody that knows me decently well probably knew that was true. And this isn't a joke, folks. This is a fact. So, yeah, I'm in the program. I'm in AA, got a sponsor. I'm done drinking for good, for life. I'm on the wagon. And we're going to have a whole episode on addiction, so I'll dive in there. My point is this. So let's say I started drinking in high school when I was 15, blackout drunk for 20 years ever since then. So everyone that knew me in high school, oh, Zach, yeah, work hard, play hard, party guy. He's a big drinker. They meet me 20 years later, whatever. They look at me and might say, okay, he's somewhat successful. He seems happy and well-adjusted. I know him at his core, though.
No.
He's an alcoholic. No, I'm not challenging you. I'm just asking. So,
well, here's my point.
But my point, I'd say, is yes, that core hasn't changed. But the way I respond to that core and that need that my core is giving me, which is take that first drink, Zach. It's okay. You'll be able to control it. This time, I've had to change my response to who I am. So that's, I'm saying that stability is still with me, but the way that I respond to it has changed.
And that's that, and that totally makes sense. And this is good why we said evolution of identity, because it's working out this way, because we're talking about it. And that's why, I guess that's the way life is. But what I was trying to say was that at our core is before all that, right? So there was a time where you were Zach Schaefer, potential alcoholic, right? Mm-hmm. Alcohol had never entered your life. You had never tasted it, mm-hmm. right? And so when I say that is who you are at your core, that's what I mean. And so, yeah, that layer came into your life, right? And you embraced it, and now you're trying to strip it off, and you're trying to strip it away. And there are some people that will label you as that core with that layer for the rest of your life. But that's not who you are at your core. Get what I'm saying?
Kind of, but that's okay.
I think we're born, and as we become kids and we're, like, exploring this world, that's the core that I'm talking about, man. And I feel like it's real small. Right? So there's not a whole lot to it.
Where does the nature versus nurture play into your idea of identity core?
I believe in epigenetics. So I believe that experiences that our ancestors have had get passed down to us. And we're not aware of it on a conscious level. But I believe that it drives our tendencies and our behaviors and our actions to be exploratory or to be more fearful and more reclusive or whatever. I think I've said this on the podcast before. They've done experiments with animals that kind of shows this. And I even think that now gene science is backing this up. But it's basically, they did an experiment where there were these birds that lived on an island, and they didn't have any predators. All the predators had died out generations ago. And they took a kite that was shaped in the form of their most recent predator, right? None of these birds had ever seen this predator. They'd had four or five generations of these birds that didn't have a predator. So they were, you know, prolific. And they flew this kite up in the sky, and the birds naturally freaked out and hid. And they're like, okay, I mean, that's not 100% proof, but it's pretty good indication, right, that something got passed down in their genes. They knew to be afraid of this thing.
So you believe more nature over nurture?
I don't know. I believe both. But I think there are some people that don't believe there's any – they think you're born as this blank slate, and all of your nurture is what turns you into whatever.
And then
I think it's a mixture.
There are people that believe the exact opposite too, that right. No matter what society, environment, setting, upbringing does, education, you are who you are through your DNA.
Yeah, and I believe neither of those. What I believe is we're talking about these layers that you add on to yourself and that you can strip away. And it's – and I don't think you recognize it when you're young, but I think as you become older, you can become introspective and try to realize what layers you've embraced and you've added onto yourself and you've internalized and you've externalized, right? And then try to decide what you're going to do about that.
What I like about identity or life in general and my connection to life is as soon as one door closes, another one opens. And I truly believe that. And I always do an inventory of my year. And since we're at the beginning of a new year, I had just done my last year's inventory and just kind of saw my journey of what I expected and planned to happen versus what happened, good and bad. And then I do a grateful jar of what I'm grateful for, because I only do that because I'm not good about being in the moment. So I have to it's a mechanism for me to then appreciate all the small things or big things throughout the year. Like my wife, Kizzy, she doesn't necessarily put into it as much because she can actually be grateful most of the time naturally on her own and be in the moment. But we reviewed all this stuff together. My point is, it's just so interesting. I had this plan and all these goals, and then life happens, and I just kind of go with the flow, so to speak. And it changes who I am. It changes what I read about, what I watch, who I talk to, and who I work with, which then changes what I think, which then changes what I project about who Zach is and who Zach wants to be.
I don't disagree with any of that. What I would say is that there is some sort of choice, or not choice, but like tendency toward who you talk to, what, you know, who you work with, all of that stuff. And those are layers that are built upon your identity. And you can change those throughout your life. Think about people who go through career changes, or think about people who go through, you know, friend group changes, moves, whatever, right? They're stripping off layers of their identity, and then they have to find new ones to fill it. And it's jarring, it's hard. As the older you get, the harder changes to deal with. But those are all identity, parts of your identity that that you can change. I think.
Well, think about a military family. So that those kids that grow up in military, at least when they're young, they have to have a pretty robust identity and thick skin, or at least project that,
right? Because
they're constantly the new kid,
right?
Especially if they're not at a school that's all military kids. That's completely different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, tying back to social identity, then they would like equate their status and their belonging to the military kid thing, and be like, that's who I am.
Kid, right?
I'm a military kid. Right?
I move around.
Right. And so then you can use that as excuses for downfalls, right? Like, I'm not particularly popular, but that's because I'm a military kid. We aren't, you know, but we're a resilient group. Like, so you add these, like, characteristics to the groups in which you belong, and therefore that justifies your feelings and behaviors and thoughts. I believe that kind of is true about social identity. Mm-hmm. I guess what I would say is I like the idea of social identity, that you identify with the groups that you're a part of. You build those groups up to be positive, and you build the other groups up to be negative. You know what I mean? Like, we're Americans. America's the best country in the world. These other people, they're all losers, right? If that's part of your identity, if that's something that you embrace, those are the kind of things that naturally come to you and help you build that part of your identity. I think what I'm trying to say is, throughout my life, I've recognized that as I've gone with the flow, as I've added these layers onto my life, I'm 36 years old, and I'm just now recognizing.
God, you're old.
I know. I'm just now recognizing characteristics of some of the groups that I'm in, social identity-wise, that I don't feel are in harmony with my core. And so,
give an example.
Okay, so I was a IT audit and risk professional, right? As a group, they are. And this is, you know, this is a broad statement, but as a group, very conservative people, very stodgy, not risk takers at all, the opposite of risk takers, right? Very dependent on that for their identity, and very dependent on large organizations with lots of money to employ them till the end of their days, till they hit retirement age, right?
Because that's conservatism tied to job security.
Yeah, all of that. And so I learned that I really hate that. I really hate the idea of being dependent on one organization or one group for my livelihood and my family's livelihood. And I hate the idea that if that one organization, you know, either something occurs where no longer that, you know, I'm no longer a part of that group, that I have to go find a similar thing to that to try to convince them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm employable by you, right? I worked at this other big four. You're a different big four. You know, and try to convince them of that. It's like, no, like, I don't want that to be a part of my identity. And I've fought against that. I think it goes to you talking about the predictive index, right? The whole authority, which is the one that talks about authority.
Dominance, yeah. Our need for dominance. Do we have to be highly dominant all the time, independent problem solver?
Well, or I think mine's more like fighting against authority, right? I found that I'm one who questions laws that don't make sense. I'm one who questions social structures and things like that are there. And if you ask people who are high in that, they would just be like, well, that's the way it is, and that's what we have to behave that way because, you know. But I'm the one who's like, well, why? Does that actually make sense, right? And so I don't know. I think you could see that if you listen to me through the money episodes, through all this other stuff. I I feel like I have a high need for autonomy. Like, I really love autonomy and personal freedom. And
yeah, yeah, I would say what you're talking about, there's a differentiation between, well, first of all, there's three types of freedom, and we could go down that whole route. But yeah, you're talking about autonomy and structure in two: societal level, professional level, family level, personal level. Those are all a little different.
Yeah.
No, and with the PI, though, it's interesting you brought that up, because I wrote something down that said, at the end of the day, what any assessment, if you're going to deploy it in a workplace, is trying to do is meet people's behavioral needs, to understand what they need behaviorally so that you as an organization can try to give that to them. Why? At the end of the day, so they're most productive, right? So mm-hmm. they're happy, they're satisfied, so that the bottom line increase, all that kind of good stuff. But what we're really talking about is meeting people's sense of self, helping them bring out their backstage Dave into the front stage yes. workplace.
Yes.
No, it's another way to think about what the PI or Hogan or Myers-Briggs, you're trying to bring the backstage guy out to the front stage.
Yes.
It's kind of a cool way to think about it.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And this thing that I had read and I took some notes on basically says that happiness is being in harmony with one's true self. So if the backstage you is your true self, and that's an assumption we're making, maybe it's not, then it says basically you can set goals to live your life and build your identity more in line with your true self, which should increase happiness in theory. And so they say number one is identifying your potential, right? So like when you're young, understanding the things that you're good at and you can achieve easily. Then two, understanding your purpose, right? So which things make you feel fulfilled of those things that you are good at. And then once you got those two things down, three, identifying opportunities to implement those. And so it's basically like that is how you build an identity that is in line with your backstage self. I guess that's, filling in some blanks there, but
I like it. I talk a lot about this both with students and clients is the idea of stretch assignments. I like giving people tasks, assignments, or goals that force them to stretch their skills, to get them out of their comfort zone. But if we think about it at a more abstract or philosophical way, what I'm really asking them to do that's probably more important than deploying a new skill or doing something cognitively or even behaviorally that we don't like is stretch your sense of self is what that's really asking someone to do. Because it's, I haven't done these things before. Am I capable? Am I worthy? Can I figure it out? What are people going to think about me while I'm stumbling through this?
Yeah.
So I'm going to bring that part up.
No, that's
as part of the conversation.
That's good. Because there's something about it, right? So that flies directly in the face of what I've been saying about be your backstage self who's always comfortable and whatever. I believe in that. And so I don't know how I'm going to reconcile that conflict, because what you're saying is true. Progress and discomfort are good. They help you grow as a person. I really believe
that. And they're usually positively correlated.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say attacking fear and everything makes you generally a better, happier person. We talked about in our happiness episode the idea of progress. Something about progress lets you sleep better at night. If you're building a fence and that fence is 10 feet when you go to bed and it was 5 when you woke up, you feel good about that. So there is something there that is undeniable. And so I guess maybe what I'm doing incorrectly is maybe I'm incorrectly assigning the backstage you with comfort.
I'm not saying you're doing
it. Maybe I am.
Okay, yeah. I'm not saying. Yeah. I hope you're not thinking I'm critiquing you, because that's
No. I'm just realizing something
kind of
that
talking out loud.
I'm realizing the way that I'm thinking about the backstage you, the true self, and I'm incorrectly assigning it comfort.
What about this? Maybe this is why people feel a little uncomfortable or that they're Machiavellian or that they're not authentic when we meet someone who have completely been able to meld their front stage, backstage people in most facets of life. And whether it's a big name like a Tony Robbins or it's just somebody, an average Joe that you know in your life, that can put people off, because it's like, is this dude for real? Is he really? When he's serving people out front at the Post Sports Bar and Grill and he's gregarious and outgoing and smiling, and then he's back in the kitchen doing the same thing, is this guy fucking with everyone or what's going on here? We don't know how to deal with that. And I think that that guy, from everything I've read, and I know Robbins has curated and crafted a great persona, but from all the backstage stuff, man, He just is that way all the time. And I think it's hard for most people to reconcile that, because we do have a front stage, backstage, and we struggle to find a way for backstage Zach to get to the front stage, and he's found a way to do it. And maybe we're a little jealous of that.
I think that's absolutely true. Like, think about the camaraderie that we have with our closest friends when we get together and we just bitch about life, right? We're like, oh man, I have to do this. I don't want to do this. It's not me. You know what I mean? But I'm trying to, you know, achieve X, Y, and Z.
Sacrifice.
So I got to do it, you know? Yeah. And then, yeah, me too, man. And I just went through this X, Y, Z thing. It was awful. I imagine, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I would imagine those people that are perfectly in harmony with themselves, like a Robbins or whatever, theoretically, if he's totally in harmony with himself, he wouldn't have that conversation. Would you agree?
He'd have to have – well, he wouldn't have the conversation on the negative side of the struggles. And if he would, it would look very different than the ones we're talking about. You would assume that he's got to have – and I've always talked about this. I'm like, the guy has to have some problems of something going on. I think he had cancer at one point recently, a few years ago. But they kept it just so locked down, which I thought was – if it was true that he had it, I thought that was wrong, because he should have talked about his experience more, because – many of his followers have it. Anyway, my point is, I think the same thing. Like, what's a bad day look like for this guy?
You know what? Maybe that's part of his struggle, though.
Right.
Because that's his character that he's built up.
He has a huge character.
You know what I mean?
Again, it doesn't matter. But for the most part, from what I've read and seen, seems like he's melded his front stage and backstage. I want to say one other general topic, and we're at about, 30 minutes. So we got 10 minutes. What about... So going back to what we read, what we watch, what we talk about, who we work with, and what we do influences how we think, which influences our sense of self, who we are. Social media. Social media and our sense of self and the highlight reels that most people put out on Facebook, the things we share on LinkedIn and Twitter. Yeah, we're interested in them. Or do we want people in our professions to make this is what we need to do because we're in this profession?
I will say I think I've evolved my social media self. And this is a weird thing, right? I mean, I don't deserve any credit for this. And this is a tiny amount. Meaning, I've started using Facebook less, number one. And number two, I've started using it more like a... So ever since Facebook started doing this, this was you 2 years ago. This was you 4 years ago. Like, some of those are really cool. Like, it's almost like I took a diary and I didn't even realize I was taking a diary. And so recently, there will be times where we get together for – someone's like, let's take a picture. Or I'll take a picture of myself or whatever. And we put it up on Instagram or Facebook. And I'll just – whatever the first one is of me, I'm like, yeah, that one's fine. That one's fine. Even in the past, it would be like I would have to find the picture where I look better than I actually look in real life. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know how there's a group picture. You look at you. You look at you and you're like, don't use that one. I don't look right in that one. Well, I think I've gotten to the point now where I realize it's more like a diary. Everyone's going to see it. Okay. And I'm trying not to be a highlight reel, I guess is what I'm saying.
Trying not to be the
highlight reel. But on the flip side with LinkedIn, it's the opposite. I'm just totally highlight reeling that shit.
No, you don't talk about your flaws and all the fuck-ups you had and where you didn't find the code and the bugs and the company failed because of you or something.
It's so bullshit. Like
It's so fake.
I think vulnerability, I've embraced that. Like, if anyone hasn't seen, there's a TED Talk by Brené Brown on vulnerability. It's so awesome because it lets you live closer to your true self if you can embrace vulnerability. But on the LinkedIn side of the playhouse, you have to fucking, like, in business.
It's all bullshit. Yeah. I call bullshit on all that. It's bracketed vulnerability. Any professional that's talking about vulnerability, and tons of consultants do, it's all bracketed.
No,
it's show yourself, be vulnerable to a degree, right? Use it strategically. I'm not saying you do that.
No, I don't even think in business anyone that I talk to says be vulnerable. No. No, but I think in life and around your family and your friends and whatever, being vulnerable makes you a truer person. It helps you find, you know, better. You're more in alignment with your backstage self if you can be a little bit vulnerable, I think. But on the business side of the house, it is just bullshit how much people have to fake, you know? You know the whole fake it till you make it? I think you just fake it forever.
Well, okay, so this brings me back to two other things. You're trying to cultivate curate less of an identity, at least in terms of the photos that you push out on your social media. But let's talk about just two simple things that most people are involved with. Photography in general, being in photos, and cleaning our homes when other people come over.
Mm.
And our sense of self.
Mm.
Your wife, Lauren, loves to take photos.
Yeah, she does.
Right? And I'm sure you're in some of those photos, and I doubt you're going through the edits with that. So my point is, life, in terms of a sense of self and who we are, it's all staged. That's Goffman's point. Life is a stage because we stage it all the time. Okay, that photo didn't work. Move over here. Let's get this great group photo. It's bullshit. It's fake. It's set up. There's literally a director, a choreographer that we don't ever see, and then we frame it just like we're watching a TV show, and that isn't life. That's a fake front stage. Same thing. Even if it's just the Ponders coming over for dinner, we're going to pick stuff up for the most part. It won't be perfect, but we're going to pick stuff up. We're going to try to clean our countertop. That's all fake because most of the time we walk around, there's shit everywhere because we got two kids.
Yeah,
so,
and vice versa.
So where is the self there? What are we saying? Are we saying we're not as valuable and worthwhile people if our home is a little disheveled when people come over? Our babysitter last night, she's like 17. Kizzy spent a half an hour like scrubbing the bathroom before this person came over. Like, so what is – it's not like it was gross.
Well, I think we might be mistaking identity and value here, right? So we value organization and cleanliness and –
But what does that say about our sense of self? That the judgment that's going to come if someone comes into our home.
Do you not value organization and cleanliness if no one comes over? That's the opposite. No, you do. It's just that sometimes when you have your kids, you're in the middle of stuff. You don't have time to do it. But even if no one was coming over, you would eventually clean your house.
Well,
and you would
organize me personally, yes, because that's my sense of self.
Right.
But other people that might not have that, and they do it to do it.
Yeah, that's a different motivation. You know, I think that. You know, some people actually just value cleanliness and organization, and they are spurred. So there's like – it doesn't have to be 100% pure. It's not like – they can be honest with themselves and be like, oh, I'm cleaning the house and I'm organizing things because people are coming over. I'm being honest with myself, you know? However – or at least that's spurring me to that action now. But I was going to do it regardless anyway because I value that. You know, this is just something. So what percentage of that was spurred by the people coming over and what percentage of it is spurred by because it's something you value? I don't know.
And right. I literally couldn't work in my office right now if there was toys and shit all over the ground. It would make me uncomfortable, angry. Oh, I don't know. Angry is probably not right, but just frustrated. I have to get up and pick that up and organize it. It doesn't have to be clean. I don't care about cleanliness as much. I care about organized things in their right spots.
Well, talking about the evolution of core – right? So when I was young, I didn't give a shit about anything being clean or whatever. You live with me. You had to deal with that shit. I never cleaned up anything and it was terrible. But, my parents would be like, hey, did you clean your room? And I'd be like, I remember my response and I feel so bad about this. I was like, is the tour group coming through to get today? But, you know.
That's good.
I thought that was a clever response. But also on the flip side, now that I'm older, I feel the same way as you. I've come to learn that if I have a nice, clean desk, like, there's something about my ability to focus and things like that, it gets improved. Whereas if my environment's all messed up, yeah, it's a distraction.
It's, for me, the way that I view it, it's control. I can take this little bit of disorder, make order out of it. That's me controlling my environment. That makes Zach feel good. I get a dopamine release from that.
So maybe we're talking about controlling. Well, let's just take that to its, you know, to the topic we're talking about and to an extreme, which is controlling our identity.
Especially in the consulting profession, if you're a solopreneur and you are your brand, everything's about control. Everything's about making sure you're curating that online presence and brand in a specific way.
And I think we're dancing around something here, which is we're talking about vulnerability in the personal life versus you can't do it in the professional life. And then you said something about at least I have control over my environment. And it's the whole – your identity is things that you can control and you can't control.
Right.
And the things that you can't control, it's crucial to be – okay with those, to accept yourself as those, your image, what you were, you know,
the race that you were born as, the family you were born into, your socioeconomic status, all those things, you had no control over that.
Your physical limitations or abilities.
Right. And some people fight against those their entire life, right? And they live in this pain because of it. And then there's something to be said about embracing those things that you can't control. But then the things that you can control, optimizing those things. And I like the structure that we got, right? Recognize your potential and then find a purpose for something you're passionate about and then find the opportunities to implement those and use that to build the controllable part of your identity.
Nice. So we're almost at 40 minutes. I have one question for you. It's a high-level question, and then I'm pretty good, and I can go to change challenges. How about you?
Yeah, I think that last part was so cool that we got
to. Yeah, good. You are someone that believes your identity can evolve. And you can discover new facets of it, correct?
Yes.
That's what you've been talking about. Would you personally label it just small parts of my identity can change? Or can you have a big paradigmatic identity shift at some point? Is that possible?
Yeah, I believe you can.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then could you someday, based on someone you meet, become gay? Or become an evangelical Christian? Or a Muslim? Or something like that? Is it possible for you?
I mean,
he's struggling here.
No,
folks.
No, no. The answer is yes, but let me say this in a way that I don't know. It's kind of a bummer, but it's kind of a scientific way, right? Like, there was this guy who sued a drug company and won, and because it was happening to multiple people, he became an obsessive gambler and lost everything. He started cross dressing. He started gambling really bad, and it came out that this drug did that to other people too. Like, other people had these weird transformative things. For him, it was clearly in the negative. He sold the drug company and won. Yeah, I believe that there are some parts, you know, you can have a TBI or maybe dementia. Yeah, you can become a different person, man. Or just some super traumatic experience in your life, PTSD, right?
Okay, so interesting. So you went to three major events, and I agree with a drug. So chemically, something could change mm-hmm. you to mm-hmm. have that a big identity, a 180 identity shift. Mm-hmm. You then went to, what was the second thing you mentioned? A chemical shift, then it was something, then it was a tragic event.
Yeah.
There was something in the middle, though, that you mentioned that could happen. I forget what it was, but I agree with those. But what about just going through life and Fred walks by and you're like, you know what? I am I love Fred now.
Well, I think what I...
Or you pick up the Bible one day, or the Mormons stop by and you're like, I'm converting, Lauren.
I absolutely think that can happen. I think that, I guess those things that I was talking about are what we try to associate to other people who change that much, because then it gives us a reason why they change that much. There might have just been 1,000 little things
right.
that all add up. Yeah, then they started changing that over time. And yeah.
Okay, cool. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. People can have big shifts, but there is some sort of internal spiritual shift that occurred that we can't see, and then we want to justify to ourselves mm-hmm. to protect our sense of
exactly.
self. Right? It flipped. No matter what happens with them, it then shifts back. Okay, well, can that happen to me?
Well,
would I want that happen to me? Ugh, what reason can I give myself, so that doesn't happen to me.
Exactly. It's like you can imagine the conversation between two people, right? Hey, did you hear Bill is whatever now? And then you'd be like, what's the next? The first thing they say, what happened?
Right? Well, that's why so many fun would you rathers I give people about big identity shifts. It's interesting to hear them struggle through it for that very reason.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I've got a couple change challenges. Do you have any?
I've got one, and I've touched on it a couple times, but let's do these.
Yeah. Go ahead, man.
Okay. So think back upon your life as you were young to where you're at now, and try to frame it in these three things. When you were young, and even today, what potential did you see in yourself, right? And then what things throughout then and now have you done that gave you a sense of peace, accomplishment, joy, where you were in the zone, and those things are the quote-unquote purpose, right, for you to unleash that potential. And based on those things, Zach, you said earlier, I just feel like when one door closes, another door opens. I think that's true, and I think that it's because, not because there's another door that opened, but because there have always been open doors, and you're now seeing them. Now yep. you are looking for them. So what I would say is do that exercise to go back and say, what was my potential when I was young, and what were the thing? What are all the things that I've experienced that I think could have been my purpose, and then, and be very broad on those, right? Make sure that some of those are different from what you are right now, right? Like, I wanted to be a pilot when I was a kid. I never did it, you know, but man, that gave me some real joy and excitement. Like, I wanted to do that because I loved flying and I had dreams about flying and I thought it was awesome, you know? Anyway, and let's say that there was some potential there too. I had this one experience where I proved to myself that I would have been good at that. Okay, great. So I never chose, then I never did number three, which is, I never took an opportunity to implement that potential and purpose. Build out those things and try to build out like an identity map of what your identity could have been, and then compare it to what you think your identity is now, and then ask yourself, are you happy, or do you want to try and maybe look at some of those other opportunities and get closer to your quote-unquote what would be your true identity?
Interesting.
Like an identity map with those three buckets: potential, purpose, opportunities.
I like it. I'd reframe it, me personally, to an identity continuum.
Great, great.
So I have one's a question, one's a task. If you could change one aspect of your identity, and don't make it some enormous one, something small, but if you could change one small thing about yourself, what would that be and why? And be honest with yourself. Jot it down. Write it down. Don't type it up. Write it down on paper. And then have a 2 to 5 minute conversation with somebody you love and trust about that. And preface it with them that you're not necessarily going to change it, but that you just wanted to talk about it. I think it'd be an interesting conversation. Two, it's the new year. I'm absolutely about what I call new year commitments, because I think the new year's resolution thing gets overplayed and has less value and worth. So what commitments are you trying to achieve for yourself? Don't choose too many. But find a way to stretch some kind of skill. But while you're stretching that skill, pay attention to how it's stretching what your definition of your sense of self is. Because I now thinking about that when we made that connection, I think that that might be what holds people back from developing new skills, is they don't know how to feel about the judgment and the feelings of, is this me? Is this what I would do?
They don't see themselves in that way.
Right.
So it feels alien to
them. It feels foreign.
Yes.
It's not them.
Yeah.
So stretch a skill, but while you're doing that, pay attention to how it makes yourself feel and why. And that can just be more personal for you.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll close on that, right? So let's close on that. We've talked about identity. We talked about evolution of identity. And no doubt, I've talked about layers versus core, whatever.
Modules, Lego identity.
But, you know, whether you're using my model or you're taking Zach's, like, stretch your sense of self, understand that identity can evolve through time, and that you can stop and be introspective and kind of do an identity inventory, right? And then try to decide what your next steps are. And that's how, I mean, if you're going to be a conscious person, if you're going to be the type of person who listens to Life Lab and experiments with life,
and wants to know your values and live your values, that's what you need to do.
That's what you need to do. All right. Thanks, everyone. Experiment with life.
Enjoy the day.